If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown. 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 Rewind to SmackDown.
And it is time to keep the show moving and weigh. We have a game 7 coming up on Sunday night.
Oh, you waited for the free portion to talk about this.
I actually
people were in the chat room were wondering why isn't John leading with the Leafs in the cafe edition.
While you played the music, I had to go check the score. I wasn't even 100% sure if they won or not, so I had to double check.
Okay, and what is the result?
I mean, you know what? Everyone, I think that if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, I mean, this is kind of par for the course. You know, you don't go out with a whimper. You go out with a roar. And what is the maximum drama that can be conjured up? It's game 7 in Toronto, I believe, on Sunday.
You're asking the wrong person, but oh. Yeah. The Leafs won tonight 2-0. The series is tied 3-3 as we head into game 7 on Sunday. So
who's going to win, Way?
You don't care about my opinion. Will you be watching, John? That's what I need to know.
I might tune in for a bit. We'll see what I'm up to on Sunday.
It's a game.
Depends
seven.
If I watch Come the on. F1 race on Sunday morning. If not, that's what I'll be watching on Sunday night.
So I'll wait the reaction on Monday, of course.
I could avoid this and you could reveal to me on Monday night who won.
I don't think you'd be able to avoid it. I think your curiosity will get to you. I think you'll be glued to the screen for this game 7.
We'll see. We will see. I have faith in the defending Stanley Cup champions.
Will you be wearing your Florida Panthers jacket from
if I could find it and
10.
It still fit from the age of 12, I would. You know what? I would. If only I could.
This is way more exciting than any of the wrestling we'll be talking about, I feel.
Well, we also have some internal announcement to make, and that is a very valuable member of the Post Wrestling team is moving on, and we wanted to spend just a moment here off the top of the show to wish all the best to Andrew Thompson, who is leaving Post Wrestling on great terms with us. He has been with us for nearly 6 years, and he has done an incredible job on the website and just being like... just such a huge addition to really, I think, add a lot to just what post wrestling has become news-wise. So it's a big loss for us, but one that we really wish him all the best moving on.
Yeah, yeah. The youngest in charge is all grown up, and he's fled the nest, so to speak. Yeah, you know, I've always kind of said, like, at least, you know, amongst ourselves, there's John, there's myself, and then like really the third person as part of this entire team that I would say is most tied to the output of Post Wrestling was Andrew Thompson. So he was a huge, huge part of our operation, and we will continue to follow his work in the wrestling space. I think a lot of you guys will see where he's going to be popping up very soon, and we will enjoy his work, and we will probably discuss a lot of his work even on these particular shows. So it's not goodbye, it's goodbye for now, and see you around, Andrew. Thank you for everything you've done for us.
All right, tonight let's quickly just go over for this this week we just put out a Rewind Away covering the 2003 season premiere of SmackDown, chatting about the Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. That show is up now for everybody at postwrestlingcafe.com. This show features not just a show review itself, but really we dive into all the news that is going on around WWE at this time in 2003, the circumstances behind this match, the lead up to it, injuries that both men were facing, and a really horrible tragedy in Kurt Angle's family the day before where his sister passed away. Kurt has spoken about this many times in the past, but the circumstances of going into this match, you break this down. It's like you could do a documentary on this match, really, and where these two would go afterwards as well. It's probably not their most famous match together, but in some ways, like, it is still, I think, a really well-remembered match. And I would say, Wei, watching this with you 22 years later holds up very, very well.
Very much so. Absolutely. I greatly enjoyed this match. I think, according to Cage Match, certainly this is their highest rated match at 9.12.
Wow.
Just to kind of give you an idea of, like, you know, where it might stand in sort of like their catalog. Very good match. But that's not really all, John. You know, we're traveling back to 2003 SmackDown. So that means a whole lot of other stuff to discuss on the show, including Los Guerreros and the rise of Eddie Guerrero as a babyface. Shaniqua. And her ascent at this point in coming off of Tough Enough into a bizarre dominatrix gimmick. Rey Mysterio and Tajiri working a feud as well. So a lot to discuss on this edition of SmackDown.
All that and a 2003 rap by John Cena.
Ooh, yes, yes. I actually, oh man, I thought I linked it. I did link it. So if you actually just go to the show post, Shall we just play? No, we should.
Would we get flagged if we played it?
I don't know. It's like such an old show. Shall we test? Shall we break the rules?
I mean, I have it right here. If you want me to,
yeah, sure, go for it.
Okay, so everyone, here is a sample of what we discussed on this week's Rewind Away. You got to listen to the show for our reactions.
Underestimated the Guerreros. I don't know what to say, bro. Those dudes are better at cheating than Ben Affleck is with J-Lo. I don't got the U.S. title, but I didn't lose any steam. Screw Ted Turner and the Braves. I'm America's team. John Cena's more American than silicone strippers, leaving cats dead in their tracks from heart attacks like John Ritter. And next week, John Cena fulfills his patriotic duty. I'll be higher than hippies at 420 watching a Cheech and Chong movie. And I'm an American thug standing on top of this building, leaving all opposition dead like Saddam Hussein's children. Word life.
PostWrestlingCafe.com for more of this. Jump back to 2003.
22 years ago. I mean, does that excuse it? I don't know. It's
well, you can play the date game if you would like. Look up this date of SmackDown, remembering that it was taped 2 days before its air date, and then look up when John Ritter passed away, and you can be the you can make your own conclusions on when it is appropriate to utilize someone's passing for a rap segment. Mm. All right, and more on Rewind Away number 182. Mm-hmm. On to the show we go, Wei. We're going to Greensboro, North Carolina, and one of the most famous buildings in pro wrestling history, the building that housed the very first Starrcade. We're going to the First Horizon Coliseum as of October 2024, when the Greensboro Coliseum entered into a contract giving up its naming rights.
Sad state of affairs. It'll still be the Greensboro Coliseum to you.
It will still be to many Jim Crockett Promotions supporters. Tonight, WrestleTix, their final number, 11,844. You might have noticed that Joe Tessitore mentioned over 12,000. You might have noticed that because I think he said it 25 times on this show.
I guess as a promoter should.
Joe Tessitore is...
He's the voice of the promoter.
I guess so. He is that vehicle. We start things off with the Bloodline coming out. It is Solo Sikoa with Jacob Fatu and Blank. And the crowd is chanting for Fatu. And Sikoa gets into the center. And he introduces us and thanks my man, JC. And this is the repackaged Jeff Cobb, who by the end of the night would be given a last name. I thought we'd just go with JC himself. Is it Jesus Christ? No, it is JC Mateo.
Jeff Cobb Mateo, welcome. Welcome to the world. Just birth today.
Congratulations.
2025. We spoke a bit about this in the XL edition. I mean, we're all going to get used to it. It'll take a bit of a getting used to. The big question is, I guess, like, why this guy? Why this guy changing his name and not some of the others that have recently come in?
You know what the game is that we should play? And it's you have to, like, play along here. What if we have imagined, okay, that JC Mateo represented Guam in the Olympics and JC Mateo became a pro wrestler and JC Mateo was in the United Empire and then WWE signed this big free agent JC Mateo and we bring him into WWE and here's my man Jeff Cobb.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I think we'd be more negative on that name than this one.
I think that's a very good way of maybe taking our bias out and just judging a name strictly on just whether or not it fits and it works. It's fine. It works for this guy.
It's not like he had this amazing name.
That could be the answer. We hate your real name. your real name sounds stupid. I mean, so we're gonna give you a new one. It could just be that.
So he explains that because of Sikoa takes credit for Jacob Fatu still having the U.S. title, keeping it in the family. When Roman lost the belt to Cody at WrestleMania, he ruined everything for his family. I'm here to take it back. It starts with Money in the Bank when I bring the title back home. And he goes to do Jacob Fatu's own catchphrase when Fatu rips the microphone away. And the crowd had been chanting for Fatu, and they just want to hear him talk. He said to Sikoa, I'm going to keep this with or without you, and I can deal with anyone all by myself. Because I'm all gas, no brakes. And Sikoa, he says, I'm doing this. Sikoa says that he's doing this because he loves Jacob. And having that belt is proof of his love. Sikoa wants Jacob to tell him that he loves him like he used to. And this is getting very awkward as this man is demanding for another to show his love. When LA Knight interrupts, but he appears ringside, ripping JC out of the ring and exits through the crowd. And this would lead to a LA Knight involved later on. But this was basically our introduction of beyond the name and everything. And maybe this is incomplete because we're going to get the second segment involving JC Mateo. But what did you think of the opening segment and the introduction of the former Mr. Cobb?
I would say by this point in the show, if I were to strictly judge JC's debut by this, I feel like there was so coming off of Backlash, I felt like they were trying to give us the sort of like new Jacob Fatu, you know, the person to directly oppose Jacob Fatu, to make Jacob Fatu somewhat suspicious that he was going to get replaced. And I can at least say, like, from watching this, and I would even say the entire episode, they're not pushing JC to the level of a Jacob Fatu when he started debuting, right? I think Jeff Cobb is a very compelling wrestler in ring. He doesn't really have the charisma of, let's say, a Jacob Fatu. So, like, just seeing him stand here, he didn't really get a chance to talk. There was really nothing, I think, that you could have really gained from it that made him necessarily stand out. So that coupled with the fact that, like, you know, they needed Knight to attack him here to justify whatever you're going to get later on, right? And of course, spoiler alert, he beats Knight. So I could understand maybe the booking of all of that. But if I were to strictly maybe judge some of my initial reactions, I didn't necessarily get the sense that he was like as great as Jacob Fatu. And maybe that was the intent. I overall think like the solo Jacob dynamic at this point is becoming pretty compelling, because especially now that we have very clear babyface heel dynamic between the two, and because the crowd loves Jacob so much, seeing somebody directly oppose Jacob is going to garner just some very strong reactions. So I thought overall solo here did a good job playing that sort of fake friend, antagonizing solo and prompting the crowd to cheer louder for Jacob.
Do you look at this Jeff Cobb role, and if you're Hikuleo, are you thinking, man, I could do this role. I'm sure I could beat this guy. Yeah, I could wear a black t-shirt.
I mean, if you're Omos, you're probably thinking that. If you're any sort of like, you know, giant there, Bronson Reed probably feels like he could have played this role. But I mean, they may get their chance in the future for whatever reason they think the time is now for Jeff Cobb to do it.
Do you know what happens on June the 9th, two nights after Money in the Bank?
SmackDown moves back to 2 hours?
Oh, no, not quite. That is a Monday. Monday, June the 9th, we will celebrate the one-year anniversary of Hikuleo's last match.
Wow, one whole year.
Dominion last year.
Wow, interesting. What is he working on at the PC? What is he? Back bumps, you know?
It's probably a really hard to find cam.
Hard to find. Yeah. Maybe on the 1 year anniversary, we'll get his return.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1 year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Meechan and B-Fab are in the back, and it's Money in the Bank time, so that means every single contestant needs to come up with their name in the bank and a horrible play on words, so it is going to be Meechan in the bank. Spoiler, it won't be. And B-Fab thinks this is a great idea, because after you win that, get the briefcase, we're going to get the tag titles. Pretty ambitious. The Secret Hervis arrive, and Chelsea Green announces she is going to enact a social economic policy with trickle-down effects to lower interest rates for her Secret Service. And Bliss then walks up, scares Elba Fire, and just walks by. And B-Fab adds that nobody is allowed ringside for this triple threat qualifier tonight. So Green threatens to put tariffs on their mediocrity, and they are first.
Mm-hmm. So she's keeping the U.S. gimmick despite not having the championship, which tells me she's probably going to just win the championship back at some point. I also think like she was probably a lot more blatant with like the Trumpisms in this particular scene than maybe we've seen in the past. So maybe they're just getting more and more comfortable getting there.
Yeah, maybe we're going to get a reveal that she has obtained her green card.
She should be handing those out.
Alexa Bliss, Meechan, and Chelsea Green to qualify. Early on, they just keep dropping Green out of the ring, and she can't get back in. But then Meechan and Bliss decide to go for a double-team dropkick through the ropes. Bliss hit the target. Meechan hit nothing, so she just, like, calmly slid. This felt like, you know, you go to, like, fist bump someone and they just totally no sell it and you're just left hanging here. There's multiple head kicks. All three women go down. Meechan stops the unprettier, lands eat the feet, but Bliss is in for the save and then hits a twisted Bliss onto Meechan. Green throws her out of the ring, goes for the unprettier, but Bliss yanks Meechan out to the floor. Bliss is in with Green, ducks a slap, and hits Sister Abigail in 9 minutes and 2 seconds. So it is Alexa Bliss that qualifies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Match I thought was fun, but for me, like coming off of that women's main event on Raw, I think there's a very clear, you know, notch down that we at least saw from these particular three here. When you're kind of comparing maybe, unfortunately, like this crop with like the likes of Io and Roxanne, Lyra and Rhea, I think there's a very noticeable difference in quality. Alexa and Meechan, I thought they were like average here, but the crowd loves Alexa, so they cheered loudly for her to win. Chelsea, I think, actually like has a role because she fulfills something that others can't provide, and that's, I think, a very good heel comedy shtick, despite not necessarily being that great in the ring, but she is special because of her comedy and they based the match around her. And I thought that was successful. I find the booking of Alexa pretty interesting in that they're pushing her right now as a very straight up, relatively normal baby face. And I have to imagine they're just doing all of this to make the eventual darker Wyatt interactions feel more significant, because I have to think they're still coming.
Yeah, it's like they're still treading on it. Like the backstage segment, it's like she freaked out the secret Hervis. It's like she's not really playing this dark character. It's like
she's kind of so spooky light.
Like, yeah. You know? But then with Charlotte later, we'll get her. It's like she's just playing regular Alexa Bliss in those segments. Huh. Fraxium and DIY. This is DIY's first match since the TLC match. And what a match they had here. This was awesome. Insane. So we have Tope Suicidas by Fraxium on opposite sides onto each. Gargano gets the heat after pulling the rope down and Axiom crashes to the floor, which Wade Barrett calls a fraccident, and they're in control until Fraser gets the hot tag. And what a tag this was. He does this amazing comeback. It's a standing shooting star, misses the Phoenix splash, and he's going like a million miles an hour, then goes for the Cabrata and upside down is super kicked by Gargano, allowing DIY to hit the fairy tale ending with the assisted super kick. Axiom is in for the save. There's a Project Ciampa for a two count. Then they hit a Chasing the Dragon onto Gargano. Ciampa lands the knee, stopping Axiom's cover. So as Axiom goes for a Fujiwara armbar to Gargano, Ciampa tries to rip his mask off. Fraser takes out Ciampa, and Axiom blocks a roll-up by Gargano, hooking the legs for the cover in 11 minutes and 18 seconds. And this now gives Fraxium wins over Pretty Deadly, DIY, and their non-title win over the Street Profits last week. So what a crazy idea to build up a team, and instead of us like trading wins back and forth, we're just going to have a team beat everyone, and they're going to become the number one contenders. And DIY attack them after the match. The fans are booing this. The Machine Guns run down and attack Ciampa and take out Gargano after Sabin's PK. But this I thought was an excellent tag match.
Excellent, excellent match. I think, you know, the SmackDown division was already picking up a lot of momentum, especially coming off of that TLC match. But I think the addition of Fraxium has already in these few weeks taken it to another level. The match you saw tonight, I thought it was good enough to rival the type of quality that you would get from a multi-person AEW match. And that's usually not the norm for WWE TV pro wrestling. This was to suggest that this was an incredibly high level, modern, you can argue like best of the week type of, you know, wrestling match. They're pushing Fraxium very strong right out of the gate. I think we can applaud the booking here, but like the fact is the team needs to be good enough to justify this type of booking. And not every team that debuts can pull off this sort of like convincing win over an established team, like a DIY right off the gate, right? They are this good in ring and it's obvious from watching them. And that's why I think it's convincing. Great match, great booking. I really do hope this is sort of like ushering the new standard for WWE tag team wrestling, because it's been a long time coming where like they've had a lot of time to build this tag division and to try to like build a name for its quality as sort of like one of the things that have held up this 3-hour era of SmackDown. Now it really feels like we're there.
Well, in order to have a team beat three other tag teams to earn a title shot, that requires a tag division to have four teams. So this cannot be replicated on the other show.
No, it cannot.
Andrade wishes Phoenix luck, and Andrade says we both might end up in the ladder match. Phoenix is ready to go to the next level. And in walk Sokoa with Fatu and JC, his man, and asks, where is LA Knight? But apparently they do not understand English, and Fatu just eyes them and walks off.
Is this a tease or something between these two? Because they seem to be in completely different programs, but was this done for a particular reason, you think?
I'm sure it was done for some purpose.
I guess Phoenix was in the match with Solo, and that was about it.
Yeah, they didn't really play up anything beyond that, but you did have Fatu kind of eyeing both of them. Nia is shown warming up, and Naomi is lurking in the background, as she would be in several instances tonight. Fraxium meet with the Street Profits, and they congratulate them on their latest win, and Nick Aldis is not going to make them wait until Money in the Bank or Saturday Night's main event. You're getting the title shot next week, and you better be 100% because we will. So this is happening on Friday.
Yeah, you also had in this scene, like, Frazier essentially be very overconfident. He basically said, we're speed running through this division on their way towards winning the championship. And Axiom's role is to basically temper Frazier's expectations. So I think with Frazier's overconfidence, it might telegraph that they're going to lose this match against the Profits, which I think is perfectly fine storytelling because it gives them a greater chance.
We're going to do the NXT story where for a year they're teasing breaking up, but they never do.
Sure. I mean, if it's been working out for them in NXT, why not? Like, unfortunately, this is sort of like the trope that like wrestling kind of has for professional wrestling tag teams in order to introduce compelling tension for them to create TV every single
How
week.
How could two people get along for so long? I mean, it's only after so much time you want to kill the guy.
They can get along, but is it as interesting to watch as two people who might always be on the verge of breaking up? I mean, you know, maybe not. But I like the fact that they're not only giving these two airtime, but they're giving them clearly some identity and some personality. You have Axiom, who's a lot more tempered, and Frazier, who's overconfident. And how are those tensions going to, come out of that?
Yeah, well, I would I would not feel great for either of these guys on their own, as opposed to being a team. Paging Dragon Lee on how these guys would be faring without being a team together.
I would hope that they see that there's enough special here that they wouldn't want to just extinguish that quickly, you know, but that doesn't mean you can't play with attention.
It was time for Wade Barrett's sit-down interview with R-Truth. I don't know why I found this so funny, but Wade started off by, thank you, R-Truth. I know you're a busy man. Busy doing what? This guy never wrestles, ever. He's just hangs out at the arena. Like, he's just follows them on the road. This is the least busy man on the roster. He has more than enough time to do a sit-down interview. Truth says that no matter what, no matter how bad times got, you can always rely on John Cena. His words were never give up, and it became a mantra. And the Cena he knows would never turn on the people or try to ruin wrestling. I don't want to fight John, but if I have to beat some sense back into him, I'll do it. And I'm going to do it at Saturday night's main event. So yes, we will get John Cena and R-Truth next Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very quick turnaround for a John Cena match, and I have to assume that that's maybe why they decided to do the angle at the press conference, rather than, I guess, use one of Cena's dates for TV just to maybe do the turn. I think in the short amount of time, especially with this like backstage interview, I think they've done a decent job of giving you the story to head into this match. I think Truth's motivations are pretty consistent with his like aloof and very innocent character, in that like he holds the ideal of John Cena to such a high regard. He must not have listened to the rap from 2003 about John Ritter. But he believes that the Cena we are seeing now is just a facade and that the real Cena is somewhere in there. So I think it's a simple story. It works, and I think it's a good match for Saturday night's main event. You know, it's not a Cena match that I think you're giving the audience expectations for, like a lengthy match. This probably won't be a very lengthy match.
I want them to go to a 30-minute draw.
Yeah, well, he is a very busy man, so you know, maybe that's what he's busy doing, wrestling long matches. But it should be entertaining, because I think R-Truth is very entertaining, and this is, you can argue, his biggest match in many, many years.
So here is something interesting, is that when you go to the WWE site, you get, and as of like 2 o'clock this afternoon, they had announced nothing for SmackDown. Now, if you go to the event page, you can click on like what talent is advertised for the show. And sometimes that can mean, it doesn't necessarily mean they'll be on TV. They could be showing up in a dark match, but they'll put the list of talent. And as of this morning, they had advertised for tonight, John Cena, Cody Rhodes, and Randy Orton appearing tonight. And
who did show up eventually?
I don't know about any dark segments or anything like that, but I think we would have heard of, I don't think any of them would have been at most you were probably getting Randy, but I am curious, like, that's not a mistake that John Cena would have been part of this. I wonder if this was a date originally to do this angle, and they just decided, like, if he wasn't available or whatever reason, to do this makeshift angle at the press conference, because I still maintain this would have been so much better in front of a live crowd to set up that match than this, just like this press conference angle that just to me was so ho-hum.
Mm-hmm. The Cody confusion didn't just, yeah, clearly it was affecting some people. John Kleinchester and I were actually going back and forth, and there was some confusion there about whether or not Cody was announced. It's clear from searching Cody Rhodes that a lot of people on Twitter were also confused by that.
So, they never advertised he was going to be on the show, but they all three of those names were listed on the site. And, you know, when you're drawing 12,000 fans, like, I'm sure some fans, they're not expecting necessarily all these guys, but you go to a SmackDown show, you're probably expecting, at least, you know, when you bought these tickets, like one of these three, especially a Randy, for instance.
Really relying on the card subject to change, I guess.
Well, I guess so. Damian Priest has issued a challenge to Drew McIntyre. He's stuck in this vortex with Drew's BS. They need a conclusion. And he challenges him to a steel cage match at Saturday night's main event. And Drew, I want to bash your face in so badly that the hospital will need dental records to identify you.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ouch. Wow.
So what is he planning to do in this cage match? Like, what is capable that the man could be so, that they will need dental records to identify who this man is? Are we going to get a massacre on network television next week?
I guess so. Yeah, he's going to bludgeon him, and somehow we will not know that he's the one who did it, because we won't be able to identify.
This is very premeditated.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just, you know, trash talk, I guess. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Aleister Black and Carmelo Hayes. Backstage, Hayes cuts off Miz. He's going to cut the promo. And he goes to speak, and he, like, spits to the side, because even saying Black's name makes him sick. This beef will never end. It doesn't end until I win. So this may go on forever.
Oh, forget best of 9, like 10. You know, this might be a best of
30. He's not putting a cap on how long this could go. Last month was your grand opening. Tonight's your grand closing. So the match begins. Early on, Hayes nearly gets hit by the Black Mass, but he scoots to his ass to avoid it. Miz saves Hayes from a moonsault on the floor, and then it's Hayes hitting a Tope Con Hero. They go through the break. Hayes hits La Mystica, and then things do start like heating up with these two. Black gets a boot up in the corner and hits the Meteora. The Black Mass gets stopped when Miz grabs at his leg. Hayes hits another La Mystica and then lifts him up, elevates him into a cutter, and then Miz is on the apron yelling. Hayes gets shoved into Miz, and Hayes recovers, hits the first 48, but then Black lands the knee, goes to lift him up for the Black Mass when Miz charges for the DQ at 10 minutes and 26 seconds. This did turn into a pretty good match, but then we just got a very deflating end, and this feud has certainly run its course for me already. I enjoy Carmelo and Black together, but this has just felt like... just it feels like three weeks in, and we're just spinning our wheels here with this thing.
Yeah. So technically, yes, I think a very good match up until the finish, but man, a terrible finish that does nothing to increase my interest in this feud continuing. And I think it just really needlessly drags this out to feel more like Carmelo versus Andrade, which I don't think is a good thing. You know, I think maybe at the time, maybe after it at the time when it started, we're like, what's going on? This thing's going on forever. By the time it ended, there might have been some glimpse of like, I guess, hope that like the both of them had somehow gained something from it. Now we could say months later that neither of them gained anything from that endless series. And it's looking like Black is just kind of being sucked into a similar pattern now. You know, the longer Black spends with The Miz and Carmelo, the more he feels like a mid-carder at their level to me. And I just, I don't think it's the type of feud even that will like help both guys get over through compelling in-ring action. I don't think it did anything for Melo and Andrade. I don't think it'll do anything for Black. I also don't even like the chemistry and the characters here. You know, Miz is a comedic character. Melo is like somewhat like semi-serious and cocky. Black is like one of the best horror type of characters that they have, and none of the three mesh. There's hardly any chemistry between Miz and Melo, and they're supposed to be a tag team. And you throw in Black in there, and it to me just like it's oil and water, and something that doesn't mix well with either of those things. I'm actually quite disliking this feud.
Yeah, I think it's one thing that you can look at from both shows. It's like they have introduced or brought back a lot of characters. Like on SmackDown, we have Black. We now have Jeff Cobb. They're bringing up Julia now onto Rusev. The roster. On Raw, we have Rusev. Like even a Sheamus that is coming back. Like these are like older performers, but they all like command their spots. SmackDown's about to lose an hour on top of it, and I'm just very curious in 6 months from now, like we have seen with Andrade, like where he's been, and is Black going to kind of just be at this level? You know, it's a lot of names that you're bringing in, and there's going to be a constant flux from NXT as well that you're going to be wanting to move up to the next level. It's like there are not going to be spots for everybody, despite Nick Khan's best intentions.
And most of the names that we mentioned are names that are coming over from AEW. And, you know, whether or not it was necessarily a part of their long-term plans to fit in a lot of these names, we don't know, but I think we could say that some of them aren't really finding great fits into this company. Like, we can even go back as far as Andrade and be able to say, like, this whole time, he's not been able to find a great fit. He's just kind of lingering around. So, I mean,
well, look at it this way as well. Like, let's go through these names of, like, Aleister Black, Miro, Ricky Saints,
mm-hmm.
Rey Fénix.
Yep. Penta.
Penta too. Yeah, let's throw in those. So five names that have left AEW. And I'm not going to say
Penta and Saints doing very well, in my opinion.
Yes, they're doing well in their spots. I'm not even like looking at like the booking of it, but you know, they're still finding their footing there. For AEW side of things, it's like they've eliminated like this discourse about mm-hmm. talent that are unhappy, that are not getting TV time. They have they wiped their hands of that, and in the meantime, like I think AEW, it's like you've gotten rid of names that you weren't really utilizing that well. The TV is clicking a whole lot more, and sometimes there is addition by subtraction. And mm-hmm. I think in that case, they and some big contracts as well that they have now been able to get off their books. And it was talent that were either like they wanted to move on or they were not happy there. And you've probably made like a better like internal attitude, at least by eliminating like that negativity.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, I mean, maybe you can look at Cody as like the big benchmark of like what somebody jumping could accomplish, and perhaps that's part of the reason why like a Tony Khan would have been so afraid to let these talents go, and also the precedent to like, you know, just release people upon request, right?
Yeah, that's.
But this, I think, kind of tells you, like, there's really nothing that he should have worried that much about, or at least to the point where he would have kept a lot of these contracts way beyond, I think, when he needed to, because it's not like even the WWE knows what to do with all this, like, abundance of talents that they're bringing in, you know?
Yeah. But, like, I think if you could take those five talents and you could, like, put truth serum into Tony Khan, would you rather have those five in your locker room, but you have to give up Speedball, Kevin Knight, and let's throw in even Josh Alexander. And maybe most people, they would definitely pick the five. I don't think Tony Khan would. to be quite honest. I think he'd be very happy with that trade-off.
As a fan, I wouldn't myself right now. You know, like, it seems like, first of all, the three that you mentioned seem like they're quite happy to be there, which I think might be the main ingredient that you'd want from one
they're
of your
all getting time. They're all being featured.
They're fresh, you know. And there might come a point where, like, hey, like, an Aleister Black going back to AEW would feel fresh, and we'd be, you know, having a different conversation. But I think this, like, frequent cycle is maybe part of the design of this, you know, having two competing companies.
It's a huge benefit to having an alternative where, for talent, they can refresh themselves going elsewhere as well. But it's not always just going to be this layup that you're going to move over and it's going to be instant success either. Black, I am not, like, dismissing, like, this move. Like, it's just... It's
not a great start, in my opinion. Like, you know...
And it becomes very easy to just... You suddenly become slotted here in this kind of middle pack. And, you know, there's a lot of depth that you are competing with to get out of that. Saxton interviews Alexa Bliss. She wants to become the first female to win Money in the Bank twice, and it just blows off Byron because she sees Charlotte Flair, who is waiting outside of Nick Aldis's office, and asks if, did you think about what I said? And Flair is just not interested at all. Bliss then says, well, back in NXT, you took me under your wing, and I never forgot about it. This was so, like, One Tree Hill dialogue, I felt.
Well, why did it take her, like 7 years or something for her to make mention of this?
Charlotte's been on the main roster for a decade, okay? So this was a long time coming for these two to realize, hey, we were friends, like, 11 years ago.
Maybe Alexa's gone to therapy, and, like, you know, the therapist told her, hey, like, you made you go back and tell the people you appreciate that you appreciate them. Maybe it's one of those.
Well, Charlotte doesn't appreciate her because she says, I don't remember that. And then Julia walks out of Aldis's office, and she is revealed as the newest member of SmackDown. So that's what the Raw main event got her, right over to SmackDown.
Yeah, very interesting.
How did Adam Pearce blow that? Maybe it was a loser leaves town match that we didn't realize we were watching on Monday night.
She got pinned. That's right. Yeah. In storyline, I don't know if they're officially signed or if they're just, like, invites from NXT, you know, so who knows? I am surprised by the move, though. So first of all, we were just discussing on Monday that I don't know if, like, Julia is really main roster ready. Like, I could see them coming off of this, like, stint to bring her back to NXT for a little bit of seasoning. But this obviously feels like a very official call-up. Aldis said so, right? So it also looks like she split from Roxanne, which I think we all assumed she was brought up with Roxanne just to kind of give, you know, Julia a mouthpiece, somebody who could cut the promos for her. So by splitting that is also a perplexing move. But, they must have, I hope, some good creative plan for Julia. Maybe they're going to pair her with somebody else, you know, who...
They're going to give her Nakamura's... subtitle promos?
Is that a SmackDown exclusive thing, the subtitle?
It's one guy that they have for subtitles.
Well, Io's got a subtitler. I guess they're busy. That's on true. Mondays already. So what do you see for Julia? Sticking as a heel, I would assume.
I would imagine that. I mean, she's in this qualifier next week. I would want to put her in that match, or else, like, why are we even doing this? But you do have Charlotte and Vega in that match as well. Which you could ultimately spin off Charlotte and Vega out of that match just for something. Charlotte needs something. I guess the long term is going to be her and Alexa probably aligning together because they're partners that just can't get along, but will find some common bond at some point. They're going to be the Miz and Carmelo Hayes.
That could be the match, though, Alexa versus Charlotte. You know, because I'm still awaiting the Wyatt Six to make their return to align with Alexa.
Maybe Charlotte in the Wyatt Six.
Just throw everybody in the Wyatt Six. Why not?
The Wyatt Infinity. Drew McIntyre comes out, and either this guy was selling, like, we last week he took that choke slam and then like nailed his head, which we found out after the fact. So he's, like, limping coming out to this, and I'm sure he was not in great health here. I think this was either, like, award-winning selling or this guy just not getting around too gingerly. And he states that the vortex Damian Priest alludes to is the only reason Priest is relevant. I've been trying to get rid of you for months. I beat you at WrestleMania. I beat you in a street fight. You, Damian, are obsessed with me, and you have a psychotic level of jealousy because I have everything you want. You're trying to kill me after that choke slam last week and smashed my head into concrete. He agrees to the steel cage match and guarantees that one man will walk out, the other will leave on a stretcher. And then as he is leaving, out walk the Bloodline, and they pass by Drew McIntyre. So the Bloodline's just looking down everybody here, just creating matches left, right, and center.
Or maybe new members that they're hoping to invite at some point.
I was hoping that they were just going to pass each other and then go freeze, and Drew was going to be like, you were the guy at Clash at the Castle. It wasn't Jay.
Right. He seems to have forgotten.
I knew you looked familiar.
He's recolored that part of his brain, clearly. I like the cage match for Saturday night's main event. I mean, I think Saturday night's main event should be the place for, like, low-stakes matches featuring top talent, like a John Cena versus R-Truth, or rematches that they've kind of exhausted for PLEs, but, like, still hold value for, like, a TV special, you know, especially with, like, a cage match added, stipulation added to it. So I think it's a good fit for the card.
Yeah, at the end, we'll go over the matches. We have four matches announced for Saturday night's main event. But here is Solo Sikoa, Jimmy Uso, and Rey Fénix for the Money in the Bank qualifier. Brother versus brother versus non-brother.
Lucha Brother.
Versus Lucha Brother. Yeah, you're right. Jimmy and Fénix clothesline Sikoa out, and then there's a spinning solo to Jimmy on the desk. And Fénix gets lifted up by Sikoa onto his shoulders, and Jimmy comes off the top, and Fénix rolls into a victory roll. And Charles Robinson is just standing in the corner, like, just in la-la land, and totally, like, just blanks on the fact that this is a pinfall, and then suddenly realizes, oh, that's my job. When have you ever seen... Forget Charles Robinson, any referee. I've never seen this happen before.
Never. I've never seen a referee do it. And you know what? I'm almost a little bit surprised that I haven't seen this sort of instance of this before. Now, like, the commentators did make mention that Charles was in his hometown, could have been dazed by, I don't know, maybe some family in the crowd or something. Who knows? But a rare blemish, especially from, you know, a senior official like him.
This was just such a bizarre, like, hey, you've been a referee for this many, like, 25 years. You're allowed to have a moment of
I have to think they were teasing him about it.
Backstage. Yeah, but it was just very weird because I was thinking, like, how have I never seen a referee just, like, deer in the headlights moment? And we got it here. There's a hip attack by Sikoa to both of them, and then Rey Fénix goes for the Adios Amigos kick, and it looked like he made no contact with Jimmy, and Jimmy just, like, sold it, and it did not look like a smooth adios. Jimmy then super kicks Fatu on the edge. There's a Samoan spike to Jimmy, and then Fénix hits the Adios Amigos kick to Sikoa, and Fénix sends JC Mateo off the edge, turns around after not taking his opponent seriously, and gets hit with the Samoan spike, and Sikoa pins Fénix in 13 minutes and 5 seconds to qualify.
I thought the match, like, again, was technically fine, but just really missing a spark, in my opinion. I think Jimmy Uso is a very cold character right now, not really booked to be of any sort of prominent position, and it's kind of reflecting in the crowd response to him. Solo, in my opinion, while I like the dynamic with Jacob, when he's in a match by himself, he doesn't fare that much better. And Fénix, I kind of feel like might be the hottest of the three, but even in saying that, he's definitely on a bit of a flat trajectory following the debut. So I think the match was really missing, like, a hot character, like a Jacob Fatu, or even like an LA Knight, you know?
Yeah, it was, match was fine. Obviously they are really focusing behind Solo Sikoa going into this ladder match, but you would think, you know, a Fénix in a ladder match, that would, like, be right in his wheelhouse as a real good showcase. But I think there's definitely been, like, this, you know, from Mania and just, you know, they've beaten him multiple times now, that I hope this Andrade thing leads somewhere for him. And I don't know if it is going to.
Yeah. I mean, they could always do a last chance qualifier, of some sort. But is there the fan demand, we can ask?
For Phoenix?
For Phoenix, yeah. I think so. I think that's still there, you know. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
LA Knight attacks the Bloodline and holds them off with a chair. So Aldis comes out and he realizes, oh yeah, 3 hours. We need a match. So LA Knight and JC Mateo. JC gets to make his debut here. So Wade Barrett brings up Mateo's Olympic history. So if you're not familiar with him representing Guam, just go Google JC Mateo and bring up his Olympic pedigree. Mateo caught, oh man, this is annoying. I just realized all my notes, I wrote Cobb instead of Mateo.
That's so fine. No, anyway. We'll give you a pass for this.
Well, one. I don't know. There's people listening. Mateo catches him and lifts, but Knight turns it into a neck breaker. I thought like the first three quarters of this, I was watching this. I was like, this is like the most uninspired Jeff Cobb match I have seen in forever. Like, mm-hmm. It didn't help that I understand, like, this is an impromptu match. He should be in, like, street clothes, but, like, you could not give me a more generic look here. And it was just a very generic match that, if anything, it was LA Knight that was showing more dynamicism than Jeff Cobb here. Thankfully,
I wonder if, like, there was a note about how he looked in that black t-shirt, because after the commercial break, he appeared suddenly in a tank top.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Did he start the match in the t-shirt?
No, he did not.
Oh, okay.
So I wondered if like it was like Hunter like saying, like, hey, what do you you don't look great wearing a black t-shirt. Can we find a black tank top?
You look
for him?
Way too dull. We yeah. need to give you some arms.
I wonder.
Oh, okay. So anyway, at the end, suddenly a BFT gets blocked and Mateo hits the spin cycle and then the standing moonsault. It's like, okay, finally, we have some glimpses here of Jeff Cobb, because this is the stuff that will get him over in a match, because this crowd was just sitting on its hands. He sets up for the tour of the islands, but Knight holds on to the rope. So Knight then leaps off the middle rope with a crossbody to the floor on Sokoa and Fatu. And then LA Knight slingshots himself into the ring and he is caught by Cobb, who then hits the Mateo of the islands as JC wins in 15:23. Or as Wade referred to it, what do you call this, Joe? The tour of the islands? Or tour of islands?
Okay. Yes.
So, anyway.
Yeah, Wade needed to get some of Michael Cole's researchers. Come on. He's pretending not to know. I did not think this was a good debut for Jeff Cobb. You know, on paper, seeing Jeff Cobb beat LA Knight, yes, that does mean something, because LA Knight is a pretty high-level guy. But when you actually see the match and the totality of it being a pretty ho-hum match without that much crowd reaction, I thought it was a poor way to debut with Jeff Cobb. This should have been not necessarily against LA Knight, but just a more dominant and very impressive performance where he just like did his impressive suplexes, moonsault, you know, just get the crowd wowing and wanting more. Instead, they kind of dragged this thing too long. And because it was LA Knight that he was about to beat, it necessitated basically a whole show of Knight getting the better of JC. And that ultimately just kind of made him look beatable and look weak and having to win needing by requiring a distraction. Yeah. So I did not think it was a great debut for Cobb.
This was a guy that I don't know if I would have made him the surprise appearance. Like, granted, he got a big reaction when they recognized him on Saturday. But that aside, I think this is a guy that it's going to be visually with him doing these spectacular things in a series of like, lead like some videos in a lead up and then boom, like a quick mm-hmm. match to just introduce him, like look at this guy that is this size and can do all this incredible stuff. I just found they just by pairing him like in the background here, not a slight against like Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, but that's how you slotted him on week one to yeah. be one of the background players of the Bloodline and not one of the front line of the Bloodline. And by the end of the night, you just felt like this is just like your background muscle.
Agreed. Yeah, almost totally. So,
and he's not a guy that's going to get over with like promos either. So, yeah. Like, there are handicaps here, but there's also a way to get this guy over by utilizing his attributes. But you have to understand what you've got here in Jeff Cobb.
It is week one, so we'll see if they take any of these notes and if they pivot. We'll see if he returns in a black t-shirt or the tank top.
He's going to be in a singlet, or maybe he'll be in like a thong by next week. Angel is with Santos Escobar. They can't find Berto. So Santos says he's listening to the wrong people, but I'm willing to forgive over last week, but he needs to go find Berto and bring him home. And he is inviting them to a sit-down dinner. Well, I'm glad they're not going to be standing. It'll be a sit-down dinner. And he pledges loyalty.
I think Santos is a very good performer in these sort of segments. Even though, like, they never really increase their rank at all. Like, they're still, at this point, a very low-level faction within the company that talk big but end up never doing anything. In fact, they just keep losing members. Lost Elektra, and now it looks like they're losing Berto. The faction is now these two, really. And maybe they're going to lose each other as well. So we'll see. We'll see what Santos has stored. I think he's a very talented, you know, speaker, but it just has never really kind of amounted to like something that's caught momentum, you know?
We unfortunately did not get the room this week. Instead, Nakamura got the treatment, and he is previewing his Money in the Bank qualifier for next week against LA Knight and Aleister Black. He says, LA Knight, you have not changed. You're still the same man I faced for the US title. Behind your chant is a hunger for recognition, and that hunger will bring you down. He doesn't fear Aleister Black, who hides behind smoke and mirrors, but deep down, you fear the darkness. It's like, I don't know. He seems pretty at home in that room. But there is a deeper darkness lurking. I am sharpening my katana and watching. I know every moment when your heart beats. I know every moment when your heart beats. Like, no. Unless you have an irregular one, I would think everyone knows pretty much when someone's heart is beating. Like, that's like literally clockwork.
I think he means like he knows the precise moment of the beat. Like he can somehow.
Is that an advantage? Is that like a psychological edge that you have over?
It sounds more romantic than anything. You know, I know every one of your heart beats.
Imagine there was like a nice like ukulele underneath this instead of haunting music. This would sound like a romantic comedy.
Right.
He knows every moment your heart beats and every trigger that makes you lose control. And they will learn that he is an unstoppable storm, an unstoppable blade, and an unstoppable being. I don't think he had a good finish, but
it's just, it's funny when you recap it. You should be in a dark room. Red light.
I wish we could have these two like a satellite, like face to face, one in the red room and one in the dark room.
I think rather than the subtitles, we need to dub your recap over this Nakamura promo from this point on.
It'd be a wonderful spinoff for us.
Yeah. I hope it's Aleister Black. Well, actually, I think Black is losing because he's continuing the feud with Carmelo.
Oh yeah. They're in their best of infinity. So it could very well be Knight going into the ladder match.
It could be Knight. Yeah. But yeah, I don't see Black making it out of the Miz Mello vortex. And Nakamura is just kind of there. You know, he had a bit of a spark upon return with a bit of a new look and cool entrance. But since then, he's just kind of fallen back into like this sort of mid card space. Enjoying.
I'm going to win the match. And then it's going to be Money in the Black season. Because that's my last name. It starts with a B, just like bank. And I'm going to withdraw. Next week, we got that triple threat. Julia, Charlotte, Zelina Vega, and the Street Profits against Fraxium for the tag title. So overall, like those are three good matches on paper.
I think so.
Next week.
Yeah.
Stratton is with Jade Cargill. And Naomi is still lurking in the background. Maybe she's in the Wyatt Six. And Jade says, I'm next. I'm going to win the qualifier. I'm going to win the Money in the Bank. And then I'm going to cash in on you. And Stratton's like, you're not good enough to cash in on me. And that was that.
they're heavily teasing this to the point where I think we can assume this to be a direction for one of the big shows coming up, maybe even a SummerSlam, you know, if that could be the direction. The question is if it will be for the championship or if it'll just be a straight up match between the two.
Yeah, I don't think Jade needs Money in the Bank. She may end up in that match, but she definitely does not need it. But yeah, I do see this match happening, and this could be that could be a tough match.
But they'll have it pretty well planned, I think.
Well, we had Tiffany Stratton and Nia Jax headlining the show, and you know, over time, these two have worked together enough times that they have got a pretty good chemistry with each other, and that's not always the case with Tiffany opponents. But it seems like Jax, she's a good base for Tiffany, mm-hmm. and seems that like you know she can work a lot of her kind of athletic skills, especially coming off the top, and Nia like is really good in this type of a role with a Stratton. We also had Joe Tessitore, who I really like. Joe Tessitore, there were times like he was dialing this up to like a 15 where I just felt like he was going a little hard at times, but we will discuss. This was a very good match. I will preface it with that. Stratton gets sent into the timekeeper's area. This is after Stratton's head got bashed into the post by Nia with a hip attack, and Joe thought that Tiffany had just expired here and was dead, but she was on offense when we came back from break. There's a handspring back elbow and a spine buster by Stratton, and she's battling Nia. Jax then lifts her for a slam off the second turnbuckle, but Stratton flips, does like a moonsault landing on top of her. That looked really impressive. And then Naomi comes down with a chair. She's followed by Jade Cargill, who ducks a chair shot and attacks Naomi going into the crowd. So they're left. They leave the scene. Jax runs into the post with what else but her shoulder, and the PME is hit. Nia Jax kicks out. Joe Tessitore blew out my speakers. No! No one's ever kicked out of that! And Stratton is stunned, but only a 6.5 on the Ruby Soho scale. Stratton gets knocked off the top, down to the floor, so Jax clears the desk, hits the Samoan drop, and then goes for an annihilator, but Stratton tries to turn it into a powerbomb, and Nia does the spot where instead of the powerbomb, she just comes down and sits on Tiffany Stratton. Oh, and this might have knocked the entire wind out of Tiffany Stratton, but goddamn is an impressive looking setup for the annihilator. I think it was Rhea she did this with, but she's done it before, but it looks really great.
Are we at the point now where we can actually call it a spot and not just like somebody sitting down with their full weight on another person?
Well, I mean, I think it was intentional, but it was like, man, just took it all here. But boy, did Tiffany get hers in response, because all of a sudden Jax just treats this two count like, no, I won this match. She grabs the belt and is just going to declare herself the winner, but then tosses the belt into the ring. The ref takes the belt, so his back is turned, and Nia gets a chair, and Stratton goes for a seated drop kick and like shatters Nia's face, and Nia is busted. Oh, holy Christ. This is the photo of her afterward that I had not seen backstage. All you see is like giant cover of blood here. This was Moxley level. And with that, Stratton hits the PME, pinning Nia Jax. Tessitore is selling this like an all-time classic. They had a really strong match together, the two of them. Nia got busted open here. This was definitely unfortunate at the end, but yeah, these two, I thought they had a really great main event.
It certainly exceeded my expectations. They certainly closed incredibly strong with some really great near falls and some, I would say, overall like big varied spots around the ring here. But it's a match that I think will be remembered for two very, very significant and very stiff looking spots. One being that incredible bonsai drop that certainly took this crowd to another level. And I think now in hindsight, even though it wasn't necessarily featured on the TV with close ups and replays and all that, that basically Van Terminator with the chair directly into Nia's face and the blood that resulted in afterwards. Definitely. Still a little bit of sloppiness, you know, in particular from Naya at parts. But I think she has overall developed a great ability to work with urgency, which makes a lot of her matches, I think, very compelling. And Stratton, still developing, but it's clear that her confidence is growing with each of these very successful main events. This being one that I think is probably going to be met with like very good reaction overall. Is really like another strong notch, I would say, under her belt as a champion. And she should be proud. They should both be very proud of the match.
Like, honestly, I thought, like, granted, like, audience size, but I thought this, like, came across better in front of 12,000 people than her and Charlotte did at Mania last month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was the end of the show. I thought overall, like, this was a better SmackDown than usual, and I know I usually give SmackDown such a pass, and always love SmackDown. I thought the tag match I thought was the match of the show, followed by the women's match. But you also had a good setup for several of these Money in the Bank qualifiers. I would say like the down parts are just introducing some of these new characters, like Aleister Black and with JC Mateo night one. I just think it is left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, I agree. I think overall this show felt like it was lacking in star power, you know, especially when your maybe expectation is at least one of Cena or Orton or Cody. To get none of them nor Roman Reigns, I think makes this feel like a bit of a lesser than show. As far as like in ring goes, very strong main event, very strong tag team match. I'm kind of okay for like, I thought most of the middle was quite average. And I think we're talking about a mid card in the women's division that's still kind of ho-hum, and Money in the Bank qualifiers that have a purpose to them, but neither were really like, I would say standout matches on the show.
Well, a mid-tier SmackDown. We'll take it on some of these weeks. Is the countdown on way? Are we,
according to what, like initial reports or whatever, like
this was Hunter that stated it, like we're reverting back to 2 hours. They have not given a date.
Oh, okay. So they never said June?
They never said June, but it was expected to be after May. So we may have two more of these, but
they've been very vague about some of these things coming up between that and also this Unreal debut. Like, we don't have a concrete date.
Yeah, even tonight when their trailer aired, they just say this summer. We did have Mark Shapiro at the JP Morgan conference actually say June.
Yeah, okay.
So, there you go. Just before we say goodbye and we will be going to feedback and calls, I want to just give the shout out that if you are at the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have put up a patrons poll, because in 2 weeks time, we're doing a Rewind Away where you get to choose what we review. We have four picks, Way pick two, I pick two. I went with ECW, The Night the Line Was Crossed in 1994, and One Night Stand 2006, these being Sabu related events. While Way chose Nobody Speak, the documentary on Hulk Hogan's Gawker trial and the kind of freedom of speech as it pertains, which is a very, very timely topic, and the roast of WrestleMania hosted by Tony Hinchcliffe. That, I won't lie, when Way announced that, I thought it was running away with things. That's not the case, but everything is close enough that this is open for another week, correct?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it closes on May 22nd. But just to update people, at present, in fourth place is Nobody Speak, Trial of the Free Press. In third place is The Roast of WrestleMania, hosted by Tony Hinchcliffe. In second place is ECW 1 at Stan John Cena versus RVD. And in first place right now is ECW The Line Was Crossed from 1994, featuring Sabu, Terry Funk, and Shane Douglas. So, patrons, you have time to vote. In fact, you can be a free member of our Patreon, and you can vote as well. So you can go to patreon.com/postwrestling. We occasionally drop freebies there and other notifications that you might get directly to your inbox. So I invite you to just sign on as a free member and vote if you want to have your say.
All right. Again, postwrestlingcafe.com. That is it for the YouTube version, but hang on in the cafe as we are going to be going to calls and taking your feedback.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.